Today is April the 24th, 2024. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know and do you care how big tech companies are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at PCRadioShow.org. Our website is PCRadioShow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, which is www.prn.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. The FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission, has banned non-compete agreements. The Federal Trade Commission has voted to ban non-compete agreements nationwide, saying that they are an unfair method of competition. Federal regulators on Tuesday enacted a nationwide ban on new non-compete agreements, which keep millions of Americans, from minimum wage earners to CEOs, from changing jobs within their industries. The Federal Trade Commission on Tuesday afternoon voted 3-2 to approve the new rule, which will ban non-competes for all workers when the regulations take effect in 120 days. For senior executives, existing non-competes can remain in force. For other employees, existing non-competes are not enforceable. Since proposing the new rule, the FTC has received more than 26,000 public comments on the regulations. The final rule adopted would generally prevent most employers from using non-compete clauses, the FTC said in a statement. Non-compete agreements which attempt to prevent employees from working for or starting competing businesses are especially prevalent in the world of tech, where we've seen companies like Amazon enforce and then retract a non-compete agreement for warehouse workers. Acer even sued its former CEO for allegedly breaching a non-compete policy by becoming a consultant for Lenovo. The change will force companies to reverse existing non-compete agreements and notify employees about the change. Existing non-compete agreements for senior executives can stay in place, but companies cannot enter or enforce new agreements. The FTC defines senior executives as workers in policy-making decisions who earn more than $151,164 annually. The FTC found that there are several alternatives to non-compete agreements, including trade secret laws and non-disclosure agreements. Non-compete clauses keep wages low, suppress new ideas, and rob the American economy of dynamism. FTC Chair Lina Khan said in a statement, "The FTC first proposed banning non-compete agreements in January of 2023, and estimates that around 30 million workers are currently locked into one. The agency says the ban would lead to the creation of over 8,500 businesses each year, while also lowering healthcare costs and raising compensation for workers. The new rule will go into effect 120 days after it's published in the Federal Register. The rule is virtually certain to be challenged in court, with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in the past calling it blatantly unlawful. The trade group advocates for U.S. corporations and businesses." The Department of Energy finalizes efficiency standards for light bulbs to save American billions on household energy bills, as mandated by Congress. The Department of Energy is updating General Service Lamps standards. The U.S. Department of Energy on April the 12th finalized congressionally mandated energy efficiency standards for general service lamps, which include the most common types of residential and commercial light bulbs. These standards, which will go into effect in July of 2028 for newly produced bulbs, are expected to save American families $1.6 billion annually on household energy costs, significantly cut energy waste, and slash harmful greenhouse gas pollution. Over 30 years, Department of Energy projects these updated standards will save Americans more than $27 billion on their utility bills and cut 70 million metric tons of dangerous carbon dioxide emissions, equivalent to the combined annual emissions of over 9 million homes. The final rule that was given will raise the efficiency level from 45 lumens per watt to more than 120 lumens per watt for the most common light bulbs, in line with the ongoing transition toward more efficient and long-lasting LED bulbs that the lighting industry and consumers are already embracing. Manufacturer compliance with the efficiency standards being adopted will be required from July the 25th, 2028, and will apply to newly produced or imported general service lamps, not affecting continued consumer use and purchase of bulbs already manufactured. The energy savings from these standards over 30 years of shipment is approximately 4 quadrillion British thermal units, which represents a savings of 17% relative to the status quo of light bulb energy use. The old days of choosing light bulbs by wattage are over. With today's modern LED bulbs, we instead need to focus on lumens. But what is a lumen? Watts are a measure of energy consumption. When we pay our electric bill, we pay for the number of watts we use. A 60-watt bulb consumes 60 watts of energy. Since we used 60-watt incandescent bulbs for so many years, we associate a certain level of brightness with 60 watts. But we can't do that anymore, since LED technology produces more light white using fewer watts. Instead, we need to use lumens. A lumen is a measure of visible light energy. The higher the lumens, the brighter the light. All lighting manufacturers are starting to tell us how many lumens are produced by each of their products. LEDs are generally about 7 times more efficient at producing light than incandescent bulbs. Use a 7-to-1 ratio as a rough guide when selecting an LED bulb to replace an incandescent bulb. For example, if you wanted to replace a 60-watt incandescent bulb, what wattage LED bulb would be roughly equivalent? Using the 7-to-1 ratio, simply divide 60 watts by 7, and you get roughly 9 watts. Raising the efficiency level of 45 lumens per watt to more than 120 lumens per watt means in the future we will need less than 3.4 watts to be equivalent to a 60-watt incandescent bulb. A typical 60-watt incandescent bulb has an average rated life of about 1,000 hours. This means that under normal usage, the bulb would need to be replaced approximately every 1,000 hours of use, or typically lasting about 1.4 years. On average, LED light bulbs will not have to be changed for at least 20 years. This longevity is attributed to the solid-state construction and efficient use of energy in LED bulbs, resulting in minimal wear and tear. The lifespan of LED lights is significantly longer than that of equivalent incandescent lights, making them a more durable and cost-effective lighting option in the long run. Staples' new plan is to recycle nearly everything. It's all part of Staples' strategy to finally offer a solution to a key part of the fragmented, often frustrating recycling experience in the United States. Now, Staples is ready to be known for something else: one-stop shop recycling. That would make them an excellent corporate citizen. Staples has a limit of 7 items per customer per day, though certain stores might accept a large number of items on a case-by-case basis. Staples will accept electronics for recycling from any customers, but only those who are Staples Rewards members will receive the perks associated with a new recycling program. Staples Rewards members receive perks associated with the new recycling program, such as discounts and future purchases or points through the Staples loyalty program. Customers can earn between $100 and $200 a year from recycling. Staples has offered recycling services for over 15 years. But starting in 2022, the company expanded its recycling programs and began rewarding customers for bringing in their old tech. Brian Kuplin, Staples' Senior Vice President of Merchandising, said, "Recycling services are free at Staples, full stop. We reward customers for everything we recycle. They can either get discounts on future purchases or points through the Staples loyalty program. We have customers who can earn between $100 and $200 a year from recycling. It's an effective way to get customers in the door," Kuplin explained. "For anyone focused in the retail business, what's very important? Traffic, customer traffic. A retailer needs customers to come in their buildings and engage. So part of recycling plays a major role in establishing a connection with our customers, needing that physical presence to come into the store to recycle the items. And from there, we find when customers start recycling, their shopping behavior changes. Brand loyalty increases, the frequency of their trips to Staples increases, their average spending increases. Rather than focusing on recycling common items like paper, cardboard, glass, and plastic, which already have many processes in place, Staples is focusing on the difficult-to-recycle stuff. While battery recycling is available at Staples stores nationwide, the company now also offers free-at-home battery collection after a pilot program showed a 40-times increase in volume and activity. Customers can pick up battery recycling boxes at their local Staples to safely store dead batteries at home. And once the box is full, they can bring them in to be recycled. Well, what else can you recycle? Old crayons and pencils. That box of random old cables. Computers that don't work anymore. Printer cartridges and actual printers. Phone and iPhone cases. Coffee machines. SodaStream cartridges. This is the website to determine the following website, which will be posted on our website, lists all the items that can be recycled that they will accept. Staples.com/stores/recycling #recycle-list. There are a few things Staples doesn't recycle yet, so be sure to check the list before you show up. Staples recycles ink and toner from all the major brands. And what does the future of recycling look like? Staples prototyping a futuristic store in Boston to get a head start on how recycling will expand in 5, 10, and 15 years. New Android malware, Mamont, M-A-M-O-N-T, poses as Google Chrome to steal banking details. Researchers recently came across a new Android banking Trojan dubbed Mamont, which hides itself in plain sight by impersonating the popular web browser Google Chrome. In February, researchers at McAfee came across a new version of the popular Android Xloader malware, which disguised itself as Chrome to steal information like passwords, texts, photos, and contacts. According to cybersecurity firm GData, a new malware strain is impersonating Chrome to steal your banking details. Named after the Russian word for woolly mammoth, Mamont hides in plain sight by impersonating the mobile version of the popular web browser. How does Mamont work? The malware is often distributed by spam and phishing messages. Once installed, the app opens automatically and asks users for various permissions like making and managing phone calls and sending and receiving messages. If an unsuspecting user grants these permissions, it then shows a message to the device owner saying that they are selected for a cash prize. But to claim the prize, all you need to do is to enter your phone number along with a credit card number. Once done, the malware then shows another prompt asking the users not to delete the app for the next 24 hours. Since Mamont has access to send and receive SMS, it then scans your inbox for messages that are related to your banking apps. These confidential messages are then sent to a Telegram channel controlled by threat actors, where sensitive information like 2FA codes, or also known as two-factor authentication, are used to commit bank fraud and drain money from your bank account. Since the malware has the same icon as Chrome, it makes it hard for users to distinguish between the two. However, the malware is installed as Google Chrome instead of just Chrome and has a black border surrounding the icon, right now the malware is only targeting those who speak Russian. But it won't take long for threat actors behind Marmont to target a different demographic. To stay safe from such Android viruses, all you need to do is avoid downloading and installing apps from untrusted sources and stick to official ones like Google Play Store. Also, when you install any app, make sure to pay close attention to the permissions it asks for. Meanwhile, Google has maintained that its Play Protect service automatically shields the phone against threats like these. A Google spokesperson said, "Google Play Protect automatically protects users by disabling these identified apps. Once the apps are disabled, they cannot run on the device or do any harm on the device. Google Play Protect will also provide a warning and ask users if they would like to fully uninstall." Comcast launches new brand for low-cost internet, mobile, and TV. Comcast announced a new brand that it will be using for lower-cost internet, mobile, and TV products. It is called Now. There will be Now Internet, Now Mobile, Now TV, Now Wi-Fi Pass, and all these are pretty affordable. Starting with Now Internet, you can get 100 megabits per second for $30 per month, or 200 megabits per second for $45 a month. These are prepaid options, so you can cancel at any time. This includes unlimited data and an Xfinity gateway. Moving on to Now Mobile, you'll get unlimited 5G data, talk, and text for only $25 per month per line. It is the only prepaid option that will seamlessly connect customers to more than 23 million Xfinity hotspots nationwide. Then there's Now Wi-Fi Pass, which will give customers unlimited access to those Xfinity hotspots for only $20 for 30 days. Comcast Now TV might be the ultimate cord-cutting solution. Comcast Now TV is actually not new, and it has been around for a little while. It's not cable in the traditional sense. Instead, it offers over 60 live channels with on-demand content with the Xfinity Stream application. These are what they call fast channels, which are free ad-supported TV channels. But they are different from what others like Pluto TV, Tubi TV, etc. offer. Since Comcast owns NBC Universal and has contracts with other providers, it is able to offer actual cable channels in this package, which is why it's not free. So you'll get channels like A&E, AMC, Animal Planet, History, IFC, and many more. There are 40 cable channels plus 20 fast channels. With Now TV, you also get Peacock Premium included for the $20 per month. That's a $5 value right there. So combined with the other channels, that's quite a bit of content to watch here, and at just $20, well, it may be an excellent deal. With Now TV, all you need is the Xfinity Stream application, which works on Apple and Android, as well as Fire TV, Chromecast, and Apple's AirPlay. CNN boss Mark Thompson says network faces existential crisis. They plan to have an eventual switch away from cable TV. CNN's new boss said the network faces an existential crisis because of cord cutting, and that he plans to eventually pivot away from cable TV toward a subscription-based streaming model similar to YouTube and TikTok. Mark Thompson, the former New York Times and BBC executive who was hired by Warner Brothers Discovery to dig CNN out of its third-place slump in the cable's news race, told Financial Times the following: "There are plenty of things we have to fix at CNN." He also hinted that more cost-cutting measures are in the offing, saying that there are likely to be significant opportunities for deduplication, in other words, laying off parallel organizations and structures and activities. Thompson said, "I think we can and should be looking for ways of doing what we do both better, but also doing it less expensively. The ex-BBC Director General has a tall task, turning around CNN that has struggled to keep up in the ratings with Fox News and MSNBC. Thompson said he was looking at distributing CNN content through smartphones and other devices in a shift to mostly digital, mimicking his tenure as head of the New York Times company. The idea that there might be digital subscriptions is a serious possibility, Thompson said, when asked about his plans for CNN. CNN has struggled in the ratings race against cable news competitors such as Fox News and MSNBC. While no final decision has been made, I think it's quite likely that we'll end up there, he said. Thompson did not specify what form the digital subscription service would take, though he ruled out that it would be similar to CNN's ill-fated CNN Plus, the streaming news venture that was shut down less than a month after it was launched. CNN Plus, the brainchild of former CNN boss Jeff Zucker, was axed as part of a cost-cutting measure just weeks after the news channel was inherited by the newly merged entity Warner Brothers Discovery. Thompson was hired last year to replace Zucker's successor, Chris Licht, whose disastrous 13-month tenure as head of the network ended after an unflattering magazine profile portrayed him as thin-skinned and envious of his predecessor's popularity. Warner Brothers Discovery has $44 billion in debt that it needs to reduce, leading to speculation that CEO David Zaslav may look to sell CNN. Thompson pushed back on the idea that he was abandoning TV altogether. Do you want to get more competitive in cable TV and by strengthening our schedules? Yes, we do, he said. But the rate at which people have been and probably will continue to cut the cord and not look at cable TV at all is far, far greater strategic threat than the finer points of competition between individual cable channels. During his 8-year tenure as president and CEO of New York Times Company, Thompson expedited the publication's transition to a digital subscription-based news outlet that has been the main driver of revenue since. Thompson, who left the New York Times Company in 2020, is credited with helping the Times attract millions of digital subscribers worldwide. The lone bright spot for CNN is its website, which draws some 160 million unique users each month. Thompson said that one possibility is to have CNN users register so that the network can then sell information about its audience to advertisers. He said, "We need an entirely new digital strategy," he told Financial Times. Yes, indeed, he does need a new digital strategy. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
Now it's time to get down to business. This is Benjamin Rockwell, and this is where we take a moment to talk about computers, the workplace, IT, and some of the different ways all of this intertwines. I read an article recently on Fortune, and it was in regards to how people who have recently switched jobs in recent years, they were actually approached by a recruiter instead of applying to a position themselves. Now, I'm in the IT industry, and I have a certain set of talents that I've owned over many we aren't going to do the taken joke this time, but maybe I already did. But here's the thing. I have been recruited multiple times over my career where people reached out to me. Now, in part, this is because of how I set myself up, and setting myself up to be recruited is leveraging technology. And this is something that I think everybody should be doing. This is how you're going to maybe not get your next job, but perhaps the following job. Maybe you've already done this before and you just need to hone this down. You need to improve on this. I'm going to give you some areas to improve on, and I'm going to go through the first one is the basic one. It is optimizing your LinkedIn profile. Okay. If you're not on LinkedIn, you need to be. Not you should be. Not you kind of want to be. No, you have to be. LinkedIn is responsible. You know, some of the numbers go as high as it's responsible for 70% of the placements is one of the things that I heard recently. Look, you want to ensure that your profile there is complete. It should be engaging any of the readers, but it should also be engaging any of the searches that are happening on LinkedIn, as well as any of the Google searches. Yes, because LinkedIn feeds all of their information off to Google. So if they go off to Google, they should find you first versus anybody else. So you have to go through some level of search engine optimization. Don't worry about it. All you want to do here is you want to highlight your skills. You want to note your accomplishments. You want to make sure that you have a very appropriate current job title. Now, you can put in whatever fancy job title you have. And some of the job titles people get these days, especially in some industries, they give really quirky, oh, we're using this title to really set ourselves apart. And they'll give you a weird title that isn't anything that's industry specific. So you want to make sure that you're highlighting the industry specific job title. You want to utilize keywords relevant to your industry, the roles you're interested in, as well as all of your skills, accomplishments, and your job title, as I just mentioned. Now, next up, you need to be engaging on the various professional platforms that are in your industry. And you can do this on LinkedIn as well. And what you want to be doing is you want to comment on the discussions people are having. You want to share any content in your field on that platform, as well as on LinkedIn. You want to build yourself up as kind of like what these media influencers do. All right. And you're just trying to get your name out there a little bit more by highlighting different things that are very close to the job that you do. And commenting, sharing, but even posting new information. You know what? Just spend a few minutes, type up a paragraph and then share something, and then type up two paragraphs that are unique and original to you and your thoughts about positive thoughts about where the industry that you work in is going. As part of this, you are building something called a personal brand. This personal branding is really the core of what you're trying to get to, so that when one of your friends says, hey, I'm looking for someone who does exactly what you do, they go, I know the right person. It's Susie Sunshine over here. Sorry if your name is Susie or your last name Sunshine. It's just, you know, how I wanted to do it. You need to be building that personal brand across any social media platforms. You need to be blogging about it. You need to be sharing your thoughts and positioning yourself as a leader in your field. Yeah, you may be, you know, the chief cook and bottle washer, but you need to be the leader in the chief cook and bottle washer field. You need to be showing everybody that's exactly where you're at. By doing this, you're moving yourself forward for those recruiters to come and search for you, to lead you to greener pastures. You want to showcase all of your achievements through all of this. And then you're going to go back, you're going to update your resume and your online profiles. You need to have very quantifiable achievements. It's not enough to say that you washed bottles. You need to say, I managed to wash 580 bottles per hour. That's how good I am. Or whatever it is, you know, and I have no idea if that's a good number or a bad number, but you get the idea there. You need to post up any of your skills, your certifications. You need to show how you are a success, and hiring you is going to make us, the employers, more successful. There's a lot to this. You want to make yourself attractive for all of those recruiters, because if they can pitch you based off of what you've provided, then you get a job and they get rewarded and you get rewarded. It's all a win-win-win. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Microsoft should not be heavy-handed with applications that people use on Windows 11. When an operating system goes through a big update, it's natural for some applications to break. Maybe the update introduced a new feature or tweaked an old system, and now a third-party application that relied on those systems doesn't work as well as it should. As such, people tend to experience less than ideal performance after an update. Sometimes it's the fault of the operating system's developer, and sometimes the people who make the applications need to push an update to fix the problems. The thing is, Microsoft is showing that it's going to be very heavy-handed with the upcoming Windows 11 update, so much so that it has already ticked off a few people. This started a few weeks ago when it was revealed that Microsoft will prevent specific Windows 11 PCs from upgrading to the new 24H2 update. Whether or not your PC will be deemed worthy of the update depends on if it has one of several troublesome applications installed on it. If your PC has one, you won't get the update. This is because Microsoft wants Windows 11 users to have the best experience possible. The applications Microsoft has blocked from the Windows 11 update have either performance or security issues with the update. In light of this, Microsoft is taking steps to ensure that people aren't upgrading their PCs, which they deem are incompatible applications, when the 24H2 update drops. After all, if people upgrade to 24H2 and they come across poor performance while using the update, they're likely to blame the update instead of their applications. And I happen to agree with the users in this case, because Microsoft could tell the application developers ahead of time what they're doing, and it can often take a while for people to unearth which apps are causing issues. Fortunately, the 24H2 update is still a few months away. This does at least give people time to either patch their applications or find an alternative if no patches are available. But if people can't or choose not to update their applications, it's likely going to get tricky for them to keep it around without future issues with updating Windows. Microsoft is doing this to help people have the best experience. That's according to their standard, of course. Is denying the update really the best way to go about things? If the issue is related to performance or security, then there shouldn't be anything wrong with giving people a warning instead of a flat-out denying them their applications. That way, if somebody does encounter issues with 24H2, they'll not only know what's causing issues, but the blame will be on them for accepting the terms before upgrading. Right now, it feels like Microsoft is trying to dictate to people what apps they should have installed on their PCs. But it really should not have that power, even if it knows that the application in question can cause problems. To add insult to injury, the system currently doesn't work. People have already discovered a way around the block. All you need to do is uninstall the application, upgrade Windows, and then just reinstall the application again using a rename executable. This is enough to skirt around the installation block and allow people to install whatever applications they please. As such, keeping users away from their needed applications isn't the best strategy here. A simple warning, both during the update and on detection that a name installer is being run, would alert people that the flaw is present without forcing them into a decision. In fact, if people were warned of troublesome applications instead of being denied the update, people might appreciate the feature as an early warning system. Instead of an overbearing caretaker that won't allow people to make their own choices with their machines. Warn users, but don't force them to act. It's understandable why Microsoft took the path it did. It's good that Microsoft can identify apps that may cause issues with 24H2 update and actively warn users about them to prevent frustration and headaches during the update process. However, stopping people from upgrading Windows 11 due to an installed application isn't the way to go. Ideally, Microsoft should give a warning, but still allow the user to continue with the upgrade. Warn users of potential issues. Don't lock them out of updates. Users can bypass restrictions. A warning system is more appreciated than mandatory controls. Windows 11's 24H2 block list contains more than just customization applications. Hardware ID, software, and driver blocks could keep you from getting the Microsoft AI-focused operating system update. Do a search with Microsoft Flagged Apps 24H2 for the current list of what Microsoft is blocking. Microsoft lifts 2-year-old block preventing Windows 10 upgrade to 11. Microsoft has finally marked Resolve, an over 2-year-old bug preventing some Windows 10 users from upgrading to Windows 11. In late 2021, Microsoft notified customers that systems with specific Intel Smart Sound Technology audio controller driver are not compatible with Windows 11 and throw a blue screen of death when running the latest operating system. 2.5 years later, the bug is finally gone. Well, sort of. The problem with the Intel SSD driver affects computers with 11th generation Intel processors. Your system should be running 2 specific driver versions to get flagged, 10.29.0.5152 or 10.30.0.5152. One way to bypass the problem was to update the driver to a more recent version, which is 10.30.0.0.5714 or 10.29.00.5714 and newer. To clarify, we are dealing with an external block, which means third-party companies should fix their software or hardware so Microsoft can lift a particular upgrade block. Such blocks usually require updating an application or driver, which is exactly the case with Intel SSD driver. Interestingly, Microsoft suggested a workaround right after publishing the first details about the problem in November of 2021. Until now, users had to update the problematic driver manually by heading to their device manufacturer's website and downloading a new driver. Now, however, the fixed drivers are available via Windows Update, which is why Microsoft changed the status from mitigated to resolved. For most users, updated drivers can be installed via Windows Update by checking for Windows updates on your device. This is the preferred method of installing these and other drivers. If your device still encounters this safeguard, hold 48 hours after updating your drivers. It's possible drivers for this audio controller haven't been developed for your specific device hardware configuration. In this case, you would need to contact your device manufacturer for more information on the necessary drivers. Microsoft works to make the latest compatible drivers available under Windows Update whenever the developers have released them. Note that your PC might still take up to 48 hours before the upgrade block lifts, assuming there are no other compatibility issues, which you can check in the official documentation. Microsoft wants you to ditch local accounts on Windows 10. Microsoft is now nagging Windows 10 customers to switch to a Microsoft account instead of using a local account. Microsoft has begun to show full-screen ads in Windows 10 urging customers to upgrade to Windows 11, even though there is now more than a year to go before the former runs out of support. This move drew a lot of attention considering the company had come under fire in the same week for the slow performance of the Start menu, which had also begun showing advertisements for apps. However, it seems like Microsoft is not done notifying users about how they can improve their Windows experience. As spotted by technology news website NeoWin, Windows 10 release preview build 19045.4353 started rolling out just a couple of days ago, and while its changelog isn't particularly exciting, one change may raise some eyebrows. Microsoft has noted that this build will show you notifications that urge you to ditch local accounts in favor of a Microsoft account. This update starts the rollout of account-related notifications for Microsoft accounts in settings. A Microsoft account connects Windows to your Microsoft apps. The account also backs up all your data and helps you to manage your subscriptions. You can also add extra security steps to keep you from being locked out of your account. This feature displays notification from the Start menu and Settings. The notification in the Settings menu features the text, "Sign in to your Microsoft account." You'll be able to back up your files and photos to keep them more secure. There's a corresponding sign-in button, and while there is an option to dismiss the notification, there's no knowing how frequently it will show up. Hey, Microsoft, what's the deal? With Windows 10 and Windows 11, Microsoft historically hasn't been a fan of local accounts. The company touts various advantages of setting up your operating system through a Microsoft account, such as synchronization of content across various machines and access to Copilot. However, many customers attempt to bypass this requirement due to privacy and security concerns. On top of that, the company has been pushing users to upgrade to Windows 11 for quite a while now, to the point of pure annoyance. That said, it's clear that Microsoft will be more insistent when it comes to enforcing Microsoft accounts in the near future. So it will be interesting to see if there is increased backlash against the company on the topic. Both Windows 10 and Windows 11 heavily promotes the use of a Microsoft account that has an associated email address and password. If you want to take advantage of what these new operating systems offer, Microsoft accounts make your life easier. However, many people are concerned with sharing their personal information with Microsoft and want to use offline local accounts. The main advantage of using a local account is you don't send your personal data to Microsoft when creating one. The account exists only on your Windows 10 or Windows 11 computer, and its password is stored locally. A secondary benefit is that local accounts can be passwordless, while Microsoft accounts cannot, for obvious security reasons. There aren't many drawbacks to using a Microsoft account. However, a part of them are important to some users. You give your personal information to Microsoft. The company knows your email address and may have access to your inbox if you're using a Microsoft email address. Your purchase history of Microsoft services, your account settings, and so on. If you're using Bing or Copilot, Microsoft will also know quite a lot about your browsing history and speech search activity. If you're using OneDrive, your files are stored on Microsoft servers. Your Microsoft account is hackable, especially if you don't set a strong and unique password for it and don't activate two-step authentication. If you forget your password or your account is hacked, you are locked out of all your Microsoft devices, services, and websites. You need an internet connection to log in for the first time with a Microsoft account to Windows 10 or Windows 11. However, after the first login, you can use a Microsoft account even when offline. You can change a Microsoft account to a local account. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, you're always a source for different things we should be keeping an eye out for purchasing.
Or getting as gifts, don't forget that.
Getting as gifts or occasionally stuff we should avoid, which I also appreciate that.
In this case, this is one of those delightful examples of a product that doesn't quite handle what you wanted it to do, but did it so well at other things that it turned out to be a thrill.
Okay.
The INU, that's I-N-I-U, B63 USB power bank can store and deliver 25,000 milliamp hours.
Okay.
Now, to do it credit, that comes out to 25 amp hours. So a full charge can deliver up to 93 watt hours. That's the math, folks. It has about the same footprint as a non-jumbo smartphone, but it's 3 to 5 times thicker.
Okay.
Easy little thing, okay? As you might expect for something with that big a battery, think about the size of one of those foil-wrapped slabs of brand-name cream cheese. That's about the size of it, but okay, it's still okay for air travel. Now, the end sports three ports. On the left, a USB-C port. up to 65 watts of PD3 compatible power. Mm-hmm. The center is a second USB-C port delivering 30 watts and PD. The right is a USB-A quick charge 4, QC4 port, good for up to 22.5 watts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well designed with protection against surges, overheating, short circuits, and more. Yes, there's a percentage charge display and some beefy USB cables and a carry pouch plus a little slide-out phone holder on the side. But there's one specification here that I draw to your attention.
Okay.
Its operating temperature range spans 32 to 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
I'm sorry, you broke up. 148?
No, 32 to 104 degrees.
Oh, 104. Like, okay, 148, we're going out to Death Valley and we're going to charge our phones out in the middle of nowhere. Yes, go on, sorry.
And you can store it from -4 to 140.
Okay.
So storing it in what you got at home is probably okay,
sure,
but running
sure.
it in extreme weather is probably not. So as a way to keep my gear charged when I'm out and about and don't want to be leashed to a power outlet, you should have seen how fast it charged at the same time as fast charging my phone. It's a keeper.
Okay.
The InU
nice.
Safe Charger Pro BI-B63, 65-watt, 25,000-milliamp power bank. It's about $60 on Amazon. A good value.
Okay. Yeah, that is a good value. I like that.
Now, Eaton.
Yes.
Their trip light brand. I got in a model GC1000L portable 1,000-watt lithium iron phosphate generator and charger, meaning another beefy battery box with lots of useful inputs, AC, DC, and solar, even more useful outputs, AC, DC, and a lineup of a dozen USB ports. Eight of those are 5-volt 3.1-amp USB-A ports. Two are USB-A ports with quick charge 3. Two are USB-C ports with quick charge 3.
Okay.
It has a couple of topside handles, so it's 35 pounds. Don't feel that heavy. It's rated to run from 14 to 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, I'm not, but it is. The AC power output is rated 1,000 watts with a capacity of 1,048 watt hours. Remember, the math isn't linear because few devices consume their full rated load continuously.
Okay.
Now, I wouldn't recommend using it for unattended UPS-style AC pass-through mode because too strong a momentary startup power demand could trip its protection circuits, and you need to manually intervene to overcome that. You don't want to babysit a UPS, right?
So yeah.
Think of it as a transportable generator with lots of electrical outputs and none of the carbon monoxide concerns of a gas generator. This thing, and by the way, my neighbor just borrowed it for a tailgate, and it kept his crock pot going with potato soup, I believe it was.
Yeah.
For 3 hours, and when he returned it to me, it was only half depleted.
Okay.
The 1,000-watt triplet GC1000L generator charger lists for about $200.
Okay. All right.
It's a beaut. Got about a minute?
Yeah, a little bit more than that. Almost two.
Let's go to Klein Tools. Got in some care packages.
Love Klein Tools. All right. Yes. Haven't heard of. All right. Go on.
Got a folding insulation cutter. It's more like a thin 5 1/4 inch serrated saw blade folded into a 6 1/2 inch handle.
Okay.
We got a 3/16 flat slot screwdriver with a difference. This is gorgeous. It's got a springy twin head that fits in the screw slot, holds onto it there. Mm-hmm. And the sliding collar. So when you push the sliding collar down toward the screw, it gets into that slot and really holds onto the screw to make it really easy
okay.
to get it in without dropping off. And where was the other? Oh, I got something else from him, and I can't find it. That's sad.
You know, I get that. You know, I do enjoy a lot of these things that you bring to us. You know, growing up, I always enjoyed looking at a number of the catalogs, a lot of the tech catalogs.
Lafayette, Allied, Radio Shack.
DAC Industries was the other one. But yeah, Radio Shack. I wish I had some of those. I understand you were responsible for some of the things that that we saw in those catalogs and mailers and whatnot.
Maybe.
It's okay.
I have a friend who has a bookshelf full of old catalogs.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But he uses them for pictures on his Christmas card.
Okay. A little different. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, and that's Marty Winston.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer Club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, April the 25th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and the topic of presentation is what is an AI PC? Online Zoom virtual meeting, and the website is bcug.com. Tech Ed Connect meets Thursday, May the 2nd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, May the 3rd. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, May the 9th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, May the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is limac.org. The Kingsbyte Computer Club meets Tuesday, May the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. And they meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant, 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. To confirm, the phone number is 347-278-7320. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.